Welcome back to the third and final hour of the 9 till noon show today. Many, many people looking forward to the Clonree Hotel in Letterkenny tomorrow night, March 31st. The Marty Party is coming to town. Marty Morrissey and his friends bringing a night of entertainment, and we're promised a night of entertainment like never before. Onor and a host of others already confirmed, and now this week confirmation that the Whistling Donkeys have been added to the lineup, and everyone really looking forward to this. No one more so than Marty Morrissey himself. Marty, good morning.
Good morning, Donal. Lovely to be back on Highland Radio. Looking forward to being in Letterkenny later on tonight and certainly tomorrow.
Yeah.
And looking forward to the Marty Party.
Oh, absolutely. I must say it was a very sort of a pleasant shock. I came into work about 2 weeks ago now. I walked in and you walk into our kitchen, there's a table to your left, and then there's a chair at the back of the table beside the door. I walk in, I turn around to say hello to Sean, and there sitting over it, at the end of the table is Marty Morrissey. It's like, there's that. It's amazing the people you meet when you come to work in this place. Absolutely. Marty, it is great to talk to you. And this... And I know, I can't help but thinking Oliver Callan had something to do with actually promoting the title of all this, because this is one of the best examples I've ever seen of a bit of satire actually almost becoming real.
Well, you know, it is really, because Oliver Callan and Mary Rosenstock on their programme were mimicking me with my pink shirt and white teeth and hair all over the place, and the shirt open down quite low, which isn't me, of course, at all, Donald. But then I began to, you know, and instead of saying Marty Morrissey, RT Newsletter, Kenny County Donegal, it's a hi, I'm Marty and I like to party, which is true. And it just became a catchphrase. And I just decided to, I suppose, transform the slagging and enjoy the crack into a show, if I could. And it is an entertainment show that is really, I'm really so proud of the reaction that we're getting. Because when we started, I did two experiments last year in Drogheda and Wexford. And between the two venues, we got 1,100 people, which was in June last year. So I thought, okay, there's something in this. So I decided to do a tour of five different venues. The first one was in the INEC in Killarney, the ballroom, not the big one, because I wanted to start small. And we had 700 there. We had 600 in the Royal Theatre Castlebar turning up. And then it seemed to, the word of mouth kind of was very powerful. We had 1,000 in the University Theatre in UL in Limerick. That was the UCH. And we had another 1,000 in Galway last Saturday night in Leisureland. Mm. So our last event is happening in Letterkenny. So now when I was on with Highland Radio before, I didn't know whether this thing would work or not, because I wasn't too sure what the hell was the Marty Party. I have a better idea now. And you know, we've a good crew coming tomorrow night, and I'm hoping the people of Donegal and Derry and Tyrone and Sligo will all come out and have a great night's crack and entertainment.
What's lovely is the fact that, as well as bringing some national names, you're also giving exposure to some local acts. Onor in particular, I know, are playing, and they've become an absolute sensation initially online. They're only starting to play a few live shows. In fact, I think this may be the very first time they've played live. I know they've got some sellout shows in the Ballard Theatre and in Anglin and in Letterkenny. I'm not sure, will this be the actual first time they've played live in Donegal? I think it well may be.
I think it is. I think you're dead on, Donald, because they told me when they were in Limerick, because I heard it from a friend of mine. And she said to me, you know, they really are powerful. And they are, I think they're brilliant. I had them on my own radio show on RTE on St. Patrick's Day. And the reaction was just phenomenal. Because I think they deserve, I mean, Donegal people should be very proud of them. But they are a national, I think they have national talent. It's not just local talent.
Oh,
they are of that high caliber. And I know that they told me they've been performing and, you know, they're practicing and rehearsing and writing and getting it right, because there were two duets coming together, and but their voices are just, I think they're great, and they're the nicest guys. So I, as a result of that advice, I asked them to come join me in Limerick and in Galway. And I'd be honest with you, Donald, they stopped the show. They were that good. Mm. So I hope the people of Donegal will come out tomorrow night in the Clonree Hotel in Letterkenny. We now have tickets available on Eventbrite. That's www.eventbrite.ie. You can also ring the Clonree Hotel and get tickets on their website as well. And I think even for Onor alone, coming back to Letterkenny for their first public outing is fantastic. And as you said, the Whistling Donkeys, who are a major, major successful band, they were on the Late Late a couple of weeks ago, and they're huge as well. They're County Tyrone band. We had the Tumlin Paddies from Fermanagh with us in Galway. They opened the show and they were fantastic. But I'm really looking forward. The Whiston Donkeys, I love myself. I think that they're going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. And they too are great guys. And I'm looking forward to having them on the show tomorrow night.
These are very much the kind of nights we dreamed of just 2 years ago. That at the height of pandemic, there was this, will we ever get out again? Will we ever have a night of crack again? And I think what we're seeing and what we're maybe appreciating more now are nights like this, where people are going into theatres, they're going into hotels, and they're just sitting back, they're loosening the tie, and they're being entertained. And if ever a society needed that, and if ever there was a time it was needed, it was us, and it's now.
Yeah, you're dead on, Don. And that, you've summed up my motivation. I think that, you know, I think COVID, I suppose as well, when I lost my mum there a year and a half ago. And you said to yourself, God, you know, we really need, every day is a great day when you're alive and well and you're healthy. And, you know, we got to embrace it and make the most of it. And that's really the motivation behind this. And that's why I wanted to make it a party and have various acts and have musicians locally intermixed with people who, like Charlie McGettigan and Paul Harrington, who won Eurovision, who will also be with us tomorrow night, to be on the same stage as them and get a bit of a profile and have a platform. Because, you know, years and years ago when I was a child, you're top of the towns. You remember when I was a child as well, you had the good old days on BBC.
And all those kind of things. Yourselves. Oh, I remember that well.
Yeah, correct.
Down at the old Bull and Bush.
So this is different. You know, when you go to Ed Sheeran or you go to Westlife, you know what you're getting. In this instance, you don't know what you're getting. But that's part of the magic of it. You don't know what's coming next. Although we have to tell people what they are getting. And apart from Anor and the Whistling Donkeys, we had one of your own, a young fellow that I believe is very good, David James.
David, I know him. I've come across him, actually. He'll be sitting on the chair I'm sitting on. He'll be sitting on it in about 3 hours' time, actually.
We have Raymond Sweeney's Realtor Dancers coming. Mm-hmm. We've Corja, who had TikTok. They hit 19 million views on TikTok, and they sang for the President Joe Biden as a result of that, and they were on Good Morning America. They're coming. And Shauna McStravick from across the border there in County Tyrone from Ardboe is coming, and obviously Paul Harrington and Charlie McGettigan. We have prizes to give away. You can win trips to Europe, I think to France, from Shannon Airport. We have hampers, thanks to XL Stores, who have been outstandingly supportive of me. And we have holiday vouchers to give away in hotels as well. So if you can imagine Anton Deck, Michael McIntyre, a bit of a day late, and good old-fashioned wild fun, that's going to be the Clonmary Hotel tomorrow night in Letterkenny. But do come along.
Anton Deck couldn't hold a candle to you, Marty. Let's be honest about it. I also have to say, and we all know that you're well known as a GAA commentator and a GAA pundit. You're coming to Donegal, a county with a long GAA history, which is at the moment something in turmoil. Would you have any advice to offer if anyone comes looking for it? Because if the one thing of the GAA fans in Donegal are going to be looking for a bit of comfort at the moment.
Well, look, the people of Donegal are passionate GAA supporters, and they're also, when I think of the great footballers that Donegal have produced from the 1992 team to the 2012 team, is just phenomenal. And I love Donegal anyway, and that's why I'm bringing the show to Donegal. But I don't think they need my advice. But you know, sometimes sitting around a table and battling it out, not doing it in public. Sorting out, ironing out all the difficulties, because the only thing that matters is Donegal football and Donegal GAA. And the GAA family will, I hope, put their arms around each other. I know there's different views and different camps at the moment. But you know what? You've got to remember that the most important thing is Donegal football, Donegal GAA. Sit around the table, sort it out, and do what's right for Donegal. That's the only bit, and I'm not even trying to give advice. But ultimately, that's what people should do.
Finally, this is the sort of a format that could well translate onto the screen, and one can't help but wonder if this formula or a variation thereof could potentially transfer onto the screen maybe at 9:30 on a Friday night at some point in the future.
Donald, I think you're the best. That was a nice little probe, and you never know what might happen. We leave it to the gods, and we'll see what happens. But I think it has potential. I mean, considering the crowds that have turned out. I mean, when you're sitting in an apartment in Dublin and you're putting a blank sheet of paper in front of you and say, okay, how am I going to do this? And you then see, thanks be to God, and I thank the people for coming out in their thousands at this stage to watch the, to enjoy the crack and the four shows. And please God, there'll be a big crowd in Clonmary Hotel tomorrow night in Donegal. And they'll experience, they'll have a bit of fun. They'll have a laugh, I hope. They'll have a bit of crack. They'll enjoy the music. They'll enjoy the dancing. And that's what it's all about. And if that transfers to a TV audience down the road, well then, so be it. We'd all be happy.
Marty Morrissey, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you this morning. Safe journey to Donegal, and we look forward to seeing you in the Clonmary tomorrow night.
And can I say, Donald, thanks to Highland Radio for all their wonderful support between Sean and David and all the crew in Highland. They've been outstanding, and I do appreciate it. So thank you.
Marty, thank you, and safe travels up. We'll see you tomorrow. That's Marty Morrissey there, presenting the Marty Party in the Clonmary Hotel tomorrow night. And I know a lot of people really, really looking forward to that. 11:15, time for a break. Now, you'll have heard on news this week and indeed seen in your papers today that the Women of Honour Group are seeking a clear, open and transparent process when it comes to a statutory inquiry into allegations of bullying, harassment and sexual assault in the Defence Forces. It follows the publication this week of a damning report which said at best women were tolerated in the organisation. At worst, the report says they were verbally, physically, sexually and psychologically abused. Yesterday we heard the Chief of Staff of the Defence Forces saying that there is no place in the organisation for anyone who was behind such activity. Delighted to say that I'm joined on Zoom this morning by Karina Malloy, a retired company quartermaster sergeant and a founding member of Women of Honour and author of the book Women in Defence. Karina, very good morning to you.
Thank you very much for having me.
It's our pleasure, Karina. Karina, the report that was published this week very much vindicates what you and your colleagues in Women of Honour have been saying for the past number of years.
Yes, for the past number of years, and it's a fantastic vindication for all the male victims that have suffered before women ever joined the Irish Defence Forces. So we are happy to say that both male and female victims have finally been heard and have finally got their voice heard. We're very happy with the report.
There's a very interesting story in the Irish Independent this morning which says that initially the army had been saying to ministers in Oireachtas committees and so on that there were issues, but they were historic, they were in the past. The paper this morning saying what's now coming to light is the fact that this is not historic, this has been happening right up to the present day.
Yes, that's true. I mean, the report is a bitter pill for the organisation to swallow, and it's going to if it's going to make the organisation a safer place to work, then it's time for the organisation to take its medicine and to step up to the mark and to move into the 21st century, and be accountable for their actions.
Suggestions as well that whereas in the past allegations may have been investigated effectively internally by the military police, that now allegations will be investigated by Gardaí. That's something I'm sure you would very much welcome.
Yes, we very, very much welcome that new legislation will come into fruition, that the Gardaí will now be allowed to investigate sexual criminal activities such as sexual assault and, unfortunately, rape. And that has always been my personal bug, that the guards were not allowed to go in to do that, because, unfortunately, through no fault of their own, the military police are just not fit to do that investigation. They're not trained to do it. The guards are the place to go.
And presumably, two military police, either consciously or unconsciously, will almost feel that they have a certain role in preserving the reputation of the Defence Forces. They'll go in there without malice, perhaps, but unconsciously with that sort of, you know, we are first and foremost the Army, we are first and foremost the Defence Forces, and our first loyalty is to the Defence Forces. Our first loyalty isn't necessarily to the alleged victim.
Yes, that is absolutely true, because in my case, numerous times when I was trying to report something, the attitude was, well, let's not destroy that officer's career. And you are intimidated and threatened not to report it. So, yes, I mean, a sergeant in the military police that's been tasked with investigating something, absolutely he's going to be under the thumb of the chain of command.
the recommendation of the report that a statutory inquiry take place to be chaired by a judge and chaired externally is one I know you will welcome, because the last thing you really wanted was another internal inquiry.
Yes, absolutely. What we need now is a full public statutory inquiry and victim-led terms of reference, so that it can compel witnesses and provide documents, and the report from that inquiry will be sent to the DPP to see if criminal charges can be brought.
How important is it that this happens in public?
Oh, very, very important. Absolutely vital to be done in public, because the defence forces are very, very good at cover-ups.
I'm sure you and many of your colleagues in Women of Honour, and indeed many men as well, will have stories to tell, and we can expect, I'm sure, a lot of those stories to come out during the course of that inquiry. It's an inquiry which is going to be difficult on a personal level for yourselves to actually stand up in public to tell those stories, but it's maybe also going to be difficult for the wider society, which will, we have an intellectual knowledge, as it were, that Women of Honour exist, and that there are reasons for Women of Honour to exist, and that there are allegations, and that there are incidents that happened, and we sort of know they happened. But I think when we hear all those stories and hear them told in the first person by the victims over a protracted period, I think it's only then we as a society will come to recognise exactly how enormous a situation this is, and how much, you know, the situation you've been speaking about has been one that needed to be brought into the open.
Yes, absolutely. Sure. Look at the state church. Look at the Magdalene laundries. Look at the baby homes. The Flamidamite inquiries. I mean, it's all going to be as stark as them. And this country is not very, very good at accountability. But hopefully, once and for all, that this finally is going to reform the toxic and criminal practices and the misogynistic culture in the Irish Defence Forces. That it's still ongoing.
Do you believe the Irish Defence Forces can eventually emerge from this process, perhaps bruised, perhaps slightly broken, but better?
Yes, absolutely. It must become a better and safer place for males and females to work.
And are you confident that will be the case?
Providing it, we get a full statutory public inquiry, victim-led terms of reference. They cannot hide anymore.
Karina Malloy, retired company quartermaster sergeant, founding member of Women of Honour and author of the book Women in Defence. Thanks very much indeed for speaking to us this morning. We will await to see what happens with interest.
Thank you very much for having me.
Karina, thank you. And that's Karina there from Women of Honour. And it's a very big story. It's a very big issue. And, you know, the hashtag is there is no room for misogyny. And the sad reality is there has been a lot of misogyny in the Defence Forces over the years, and a lot of men suffering as well. There are stories to come out, and they will start to come out over the coming weeks and months. And once we have that statutory inquiry, as we say, perhaps we'll get to the point where the army is bruised and the army is slightly broken. But it will have to emerge better for it. And we wait to see what happens in terms of that. We just want to alert people, by the way, who have Revolut accounts, that there is a scam doing the rounds at the moment. Now, Revolut are at the moment contacting some clients regarding tax details and so on and so forth. But if you get an email from Revolut, be really, really careful. We've seen a screenshot of one. It has on the top forward Ray contract agreement, and it seems to be sent by you to yourself. And it's basically a Ray contract agreement, and it's got this attachment that says signed a agreement SHTML download, and it's a file, and then there's a question: when and where did this happen? Now, obviously, anything you ever get that sort of says something like, when did this happen? Is this you? And you see a suspicious email like that, and there is some sort of an attachment that says download. Don't ever click download unless you're 110% sure of the validity of the file you have there. That is rule number one when it comes to these sort of things. But there is it's a Ray contract agreement. It seems to be something that you've forwarded to yourself, and it has this SHTML attachment, signed agreement, that you're invited to download. And as we say, please don't. That's Revolut. Now, there are no shortage of scams doing the rounds at the moment, and we would, as we say, ask you to make sure not to click anything like that if you are in any way suspicious. Now, I want to go to the Locks Agency because there is a public consultation taking place on the Locks Agency's waters with regards to action plans. The Locks Agency have control of two waterways. There's Carlingford and there's Foyle. Obviously, Foyle is our main area of interest. Joined on the line by Kieran McGonigal of the Locks Agency. Kieran, good morning to you.
Good morning, Donald.
Kieran, it's a very important one because obviously there is a lot of use made of Loch Foyle by anglers, by fish farmers. It's a renowned area for shellfish and shellfish cultivation, and all these things, along with the tourism potential, are going to be discussed over the course of this consultation.
Absolutely. As you've alluded to, Donald, angling in the Northwest, was really, really important to the local communities. We have a wide, diverse range of fish species, beautiful scenery, and a dedicated angling community here. It's one of the best areas in the world for fishing, to be perfectly honest. And it's our job as the Locks Agency to continue to work together with these local angling communities to protect and conserve the waterways and fish populations for future generations.
And obviously there's tourism potentials as well, plus there is the aquaculture potential, and there's always going to be some tension between those who are promoting aquaculture and cultivation, and then, you know, particularly with the beds and so on, and we have seen some of those on Loch Foyle, and there's always going to be that balance to be struck. I mean, are you confident that the Locks Agency has been and will continue to strike that balance between angling, shellfish cultivation, aquaculture and tourism?
Absolutely, yeah. We will continue to endeavour to increase habitat capacity, ensure fish stocks continue to thrive, balance, as you say, the need for commercial exploitation of shell fisheries and Loch Foyle with the management of productive and sustainable angling fisheries as well. So we'd like angling clubs to be vibrant and resilient in the future, and we're looking at trying to promote resilient communities. So, you know, very much these documents are all about trying to engage with the local communities, bring them on board with what we're doing and support what we're doing.
Now, last year saw a stakeholder consultation process where you had detailed discussions with the angling clubs and with others to get their perspectives on this. Now the consultation is broadening out into the wider arena. And with that in mind, there are two very important information sessions taking place next month, one in Derry, one in Ballybuffet.
Absolutely, yeah. We're holding a series of these information sessions throughout the catchment areas in April. As you say, there's one in Jackson's Hotel, Ballybuffet, on Monday the 24th of April from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. that some of your listeners would be interested in. We're also going to hold one at the Locks Agency's headquarters here in Prehen in Derry on Monday the 17th of April from 6 to 9 p.m. So we would encourage as many people as possible to come along. There will be agency staff there to present the documents on the night and answer any questions on the documents whilst assisting with the feedback process, because ultimately we want as much feedback as possible to improve these documents going forward.
There's also a survey on the Locks Agency's website that people can fill in.
Yes, absolutely. There's an online survey tool just to make it a little bit easier for people to get their feedback back to us, okay?
And that's locks-agency.org, the website there. Ultimately, Kieran, this is all moving towards what will be the Fisheries and Angling Improvement Strategy for Foyle and Carlingford 2022 to 2030. So the importance of this really to anyone who has an interest in the Foyle is, look, this is going to govern the policy that will be in place on the Foyle effectively for the next 7-8 years.
Absolutely, yes. We have 4 key themes within the strategy: communications and partnership, sound evidence base, maximising potential and successful delivery of our projects. And it really will be really influential in terms of the delivery of those projects over the next 8 years. We're looking at using nature-based approaches, promoting the involvement of our local clubs in the projects that we do. We have a very good reputation for delivery on the ground. We've planted over 20,000 trees last year, installed over 18,000 metres of fencing, provided over 300 new angler access points throughout our the Foyle and Carlingford areas. So realistically, this strategy document will be the definition of what we're going to be doing. And now is the opportunity for people to put their spoke in and try and shape it and mould it and make sure that we can deliver fully for our stakeholders over the next 10 years.
Kieran McGonigal from the Lux Agency, thanks indeed for speaking to us this morning. Just to repeat those public meetings, the Lux Agency HQ in Prehennenderry on Monday, April 17th, in Jackson's Hotel, Ballybuffet on Monday, April 24th. Both those sessions, 6pm to 9pm, agency staff on hand. Plans will be available for inspection, or people can go to lux-agency.org and look at the surveys and the documents there as well. But for now, Kieran, thanks very much indeed.
Thank you.
That's Kieran there from the Lux Agency. And as you know, as we say, this is going to govern the policy that oversees what happens on Lough Foyle for the next 7-8 years up to 2030. So, you know, important that if you have something to say on that, now, as they say, is the time to say it. A few of your comments before we go to a break. Caller says, so we have to raise taxes because the government squandered our money foolishly over this past couple of years. Another caller says, and we were speaking earlier to Paddy Diver about Fianna Fáil. Caller says, Fianna Fáil standing up for the people, huh? You might as well be talking to the wall. The government or the council don't give a damn. I have someone to access a property for my mum. I've heard nothing from them since. That was the summer of last year. Don't be waiting for people to do things. Want to mention that tomorrow in O'Flaherty's Bar in aid of Crumlin Hospital between 10:30 and 3:00 in support of the Run for Ella, there is a coffee morning that's taking place, as we say, O'Flaherty's Bar tomorrow between 10:30 and 3:00. That's in support of Crumlin Hospital, and it's the Run for Ella is the overall umbrella organ, event over which that's happening. We were speaking earlier about a cashless society, and a caller says, regarding a cashless society, there was a great thing on Facebook a few weeks ago about the difference in paying a bill with €50 cash versus €50 on a bank card. When €50 cash had changed hands a few times as cash in different businesses, it was still worth €50. But the bank card transaction that was used again a few times as different bank cards had lost so much value with charges. Basically, the banks would be the main winners in a cashless society. And I remember I saw a really interesting piece a couple of years back about shopping local, and it sort of tracked €20, and it said you go into a shop and you pay €20 in your local shop. The shop will then go down the road and give that €20 to the local dance teacher for their child's dance lesson. The dance teacher will then go down and give that €20 to the local shoe shop to buy a pair of runners. The owner of the shoe shop will then use that €20 to go to the local restaurant for a night out, and the local restaurant will use the money for, and the idea being that this €20 kept on circulating within the community and within local businesses, and that's the key to what shopping in local businesses actually means. And caller, I take your point with regards to the cashless society, absolutely, and thank you very much indeed for the call. All semi-detached houses should have a cavity wall between them with sound insulation. Now, that is absolutely true with regards to, we were speaking earlier about those semi-detached houses and that crazy situation we have in Heather Park in Buncrana, where you have two adjoining houses, both believed to be affected by defective blocks. One of them has been knocked down because their owners are on the scheme. The other, because it's rented, is not on the scheme, so it's got to stay standing. So we now have this standing semi-detached house that is going to have to go at some stage. The house beside it's been knocked, and it's all a little bit crazy. Now, let's go to a very short break. After that, we'll be back with our next guest. 23 minutes to 12, to be precise. This time next week, you could be celebrating, because this time next week, someone will have just won a €10,000 travel voucher on Highland Radio with an additional €5,000 spending money. In association with Atlantic Travel, the lucky winner can choose anywhere in the world to travel to. It's utterly your choice. Your €10,000 can be used wherever and whenever you want. You can use it once for a massive round the world trip, or you can break it up and use it for several visits to your favourite destinations. The choice is in your hands. All you have to do to win is buy a ticket at highlandradio.com, click on Win a Holiday, answer a simple question, and then choose either one ticket for €10, six tickets for €50, or 10 tickets for €80. The closing date for entries is 11 o'clock on this day week, Thursday 6th of April. The draw will be live on the 9 till noon show with Greg at 11:30 on next Thursday. So, as I say, around about this time next week, you could be celebrating Highland Radio, making dreams a reality, and hopefully we can make your dream a reality. But as the old saying goes, you got to meet us halfway and get a ticket. Now, I want to move on to a very important conference taking place next month. Ireland's largest environmental research conference is coming to ATU Donegal. It's taking place from the 3rd to the 5th of April. The co-organiser of it is the lecturer in analytical science and instrumentation at ATU in Donegal. That is Dr. Dennis McCrudden. And Dr. McCrudden joins us on Zoom. Dennis, good morning.
Good morning, Donal. How are you?
Very well indeed, thank you. Tell us something of this conference, because certainly on paper, the briefing notes I have, Dennis, this looks like a very important conference indeed.
Yes, we're delighted with the response we've got for the conference. Now, just before we go, I just want to thank Highland Radio for giving us the opportunity to come in there, because on behalf of the Environ 2023 Organising Committee, it's great to get this little bit of airtime. So it's the longest running and the largest environmental conference on the island of Ireland. It's increased in popularity due to the environmental issues that's with us all now. It's run in conjunction with the Environmental Science Association of Ireland. They're a voluntary group, so they give us great help in the organisation of the conference itself. They're a non-profit organisation, so all we hope to do is break even with this conference. This is the 33rd event. The theme of the event is evidence and plans towards a sustainable future. And I think what we really mean by that is people have accepted now that climate change is happening. Now is the time where plans have to be put in place, and they have to be in place fairly quickly to try to stem the tide of this global warming issue that's going to affect everybody in the future.
There's going to be a particular emphasis on agriculture, particularly in the panel debate.
There is indeed, Donald. So this is the first time we've held it in Donegal, and we have a full programme as well, Donald. And as part of that, we're having a public debate, a public panel debate. So that's really where we want to get our message out there. We have quite a good panel of speakers on that. We have Colin Margie, MEP, in the Midlands there, who was involved in the CAP reforms in Brussels. We have Douglas McMillan from Restoration Ireland. We have Paul O'Brien from the IFA. We have James Moran, ATU Galway, who is involved with different environmental farming practices. And we have Dr. Edna Curley from who is the principal in Mount Bellew Agricultural College, who will chair the event. She's a very hands-on person, and she knows exactly what's happening on the ground. So I suppose, really, the topic of debate is the implications and solutions of future climate change actions on agriculture. So there's a lot of things coming down the line now for anybody that's involved in agriculture, and in particular the farming community. And, you know, I suppose scientists want to work with farmers. We want to work with farmers. They have to be part of the solution. Therefore, they can't be expected to do all these adaptation measures and mitigation measures without some sort of compensation. There has to be some sort of compensation there for them.
And part of the problem has been that this debate's been very much phrased in what farmers will have to cut, what farmers will have to lose, what farmers will have to not do. The reality is farmers have been working the land for generations, for centuries. And, you know, you can argue no one knows the land better than farmers. So you can have someone like yourself who's an analytical scientist, and you can bring all the evidence based and everything else to the table, but farmers can bring a lifetime of experience and generations of experience. And if the two of you work together, you know, that's going to be the optimum way in which solutions are found. If a government tries to impose restrictions and cuts, it's not going to work.
That is definitely correct, you know, and that's the way we would look at it. That's the way I think sometimes there's a view out there that people in science and farmers are at odds with each other. But I think it might be a little bit of politics being played in some ways there. I think scientists or environmentalists don't care how they just want the measures that's required to be put in place. And some of these measures, there's no doubt about it, it'll involve, especially for maybe dairy farmers, large cuts in their herds, which, you know, they have become very efficient. And to cut their herds now is going to really dig into their profits. So there has to be something put in line there that they can actually. And this is one of the reasons why we want as many people as possible from agriculture to try to come to the debate. It's hard to debate hearing firsthand the stories from maybe agricultural consultants, agricultural advisors, even environmentalists, but most importantly, the people that work the land, the farmers themselves.
Another central element of the events is going to be a visit to Glenveagh National Park, and I suppose for something looking at the land and looking at biodiversity and linked issues, where better than Glenveagh National Park to get a real sense of the land and get a real sense of things like biodiversity?
Yes, and this trip to Glenveagh has been really popular with the delegates. We're amazed at how many people. We're overbooked. We've had it actually turn, unfortunately, some people down on going to the trip to Glenveagh. We're just at capacity of what they can cater for. They really were excellent. The people out in Glenveagh were excellent with us. They're excellent organisers. They put in place four different conservation projects leaders who's going to talk to them on the environmental plans that they have for Glenveagh. And that's going to be really of great interest to the people that's going to go out there. The scientists are going to go out there. They're going to hear on the ground exactly what's happening at Glenveagh. And there's lots of good things happening in Glenveagh from an environmental perspective.
From the point of view of organising the event, obviously you're on the organising committee yourself, Dennis. It must be a difficult one. I'm sure you've attended previous conferences yourself, just as a delegate. It must be very different now to be on the other side of the fence, as it were, be one of the organisers. You suddenly appreciate, I suspect, what all your predecessors had to do over the years.
I had no idea what I was getting into doing, to be honest. I had no idea what I was getting. But I had brilliant help from the organising committee in ATU Donegal here, and the scientific committee as well. So there's two committees, if you like. But even at that, you know, there's Sinead Mackin that works as administrator with the ESAI that I mentioned earlier, did a lot of the groundwork. She's been involved for many years. So it was great to have somebody that knew when we had to have something in line. But even at that, Donald, it was a much greater task than ever I imagined. And now, as you say, I now appreciate people who organise large-scale events such as this, how many different pieces has to be put in place before you actually get to Monday morning.
Yeah.
We get to that point.
But at least we did get the promise when we were talking about the transition from the ITs to the ATU, and we were talking about the whole Connacht Ulster process and all that over the years. One of the promises made was that it would be the ATU would become a central part of the community, and we'd see far more research, we'd see far more engagement, and I think events like this very much are making that promise a reality.
Yes, exactly, Donal, and you know, We now can work with researchers in ATU Galway and ATU Sligo, so we have a much broader base. And one of the big things about that is a shared equipment. So, you know, you don't have to rely, maybe we may have a piece of equipment, but Sligo or Galway may have a piece of equipment. We now have access to that as well. We have access to, as well as that, we have access to experts. You may be working on something that you may require an expert in some particular field in Galway or Mayo, and now that's also available to us now, Donald. So I think there's a lot of pluses to be involved in a bigger. I know the campuses are a little scattered, some people say, but with technology now and what not, you know, it's not a major problem, really.
Yeah. Dr. Dennis McCrudden, thanks indeed for speaking to us this morning. We wish you all the best with the conference. Gets underway, as you say, on Monday. And that visit to Glenveagh, sadly, for those who may be thinking about it, oversubscribed at this point. But that panel debate, particularly on the implications and solutions of future climate change actions on agriculture, it's an important one. You're hoping for a good attendance at that. And not just academics, you want farmers to be there as well.
Exactly. Thank you very much, Donald.
Dennis, it's been our pleasure. Thank you very much indeed. That's Dennis there, and that event taking place from Monday to Wednesday of next week. It's the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. Time for a break. A query in from a caller, and it simply says this. Hi, Donald. As an elderly couple with a mica house, if we die before redress, does the claim die with us, or does it continue with the person the house is willed to? There's a sadness to that question. There really is. I would certainly expect, and I would hope, that the claim would continue with the person that the house is willed to, that if a claim is being moved in respect of a house, the claim is moved in respect of that house, and if the current occupants sadly are no longer with us, and long may it be before that's an issue, I hasten to add, but if it does become an issue, that should not make any change whatsoever to the claim. The claim is being made in respect of the house. That would be the way I would look at that, and hopefully that is the situation. Speaking earlier to Paddy Diver, Paddy mentioned a Mary O'Regan in the course of his, and I asked if that was the lady who had spoken, because the name resonated with me, because I had attended the MICA protest, the first one that took place outside the community centre in Letterkenny, which, if I recall correctly, was in about May 2020. It was during the first sort of COVID wave, and it took place at the community centre, and I remember a lady who was an older lady who spoke very much, you know, on behalf of older people, and she spoke with passion and she spoke with fire. And Mary now joins us on the line. Mary, good morning.
Good morning, Donal.
Mary, as I did say, yeah, to Paddy that you spoke with passion and with fire on that day, and Paddy did say to us that sadly your health is not what it was back then, and sadly as a result of what you're going through, maybe some of that passion and some of that fire is temporarily gone.
It's coming back.
Good. I'm delighted to hear it.
Yes, I was aware. I was made aware that OAPs were not really being catered for in the MICA redress. Like, the 90-10 was taken on, accepted by them. But a lot of people on that committee would have had at least one salary going into their house, some of them two, and there was a few OAPs on it, and they obviously had good state pensions or good private pensions. Now, I got on it because I'm an OAP. I live on a state pension. And there were an awful lot of people like me. And I felt that I had a voice, and I was going to do it. And that's the people I did it for. Now, I had, I can't believe it. Like, I had TV3 here, and my daughter standing behind the camera with a cue card. You know, it was hilarious. I had RTE. I had BBC Scotland. They did a documentary. And Paddy would ring up Mary, would you do a podcast with me? Yeah, Paddy. Then Michael Doherty, one night, 10 to 9, Mary, I have a big favour to ask you. Oh, go on, Michael, ask. Could I bring the bishops to your house tomorrow? You know, and everything was yes, yes, yes. And I did a lot of videos, and I ended up going to Brussels, part of the MICA delegation. And the second night in Brussels, no, I didn't feel well. And when I came home, people were saying to me, Mary, you don't look well. Are you okay? And got through Christmas, and on St. Stephen's night, as we'd called down south, I went upstairs about 8 o'clock. My bedroom was my sanctuary. It was my bolt hole. It was the one place I felt safe. And me, I have a beautiful little dog. We went up to the bedroom, and I would play tug of war with him. He'd fall asleep. I would be doing games on the phone, or I'd be reading or watching television. And I happened to look up and say, oh gosh, nearly 12 o'clock. I better get up and bring the dog out. So normally I would go into the bathroom, and then me and the dog would go out. But that night, for some reason, when you walked out of my bedroom door, the staircase was directly to your right. Actually, it was a very dangerous situation. But I stood at the top step, and there was a big cloud in front of me. And I remember nothing else until I was being wheeled in a bed. I didn't know where I was. It was three nights later, and I was being wheeled in. I don't remember ambulance men. I don't remember emergency department or anything like that. And I put it all down to stress and anxiety for what? I probably overdid it for a woman of my age, not realising it. And I'm at the stage now, I'm 72. With that fall, I had a bleed in my brain, fractured skull, fractured coccyx. Now, today, I have no sense of taste or smell. Absolutely no smell. And the taste is sweet, sour, savoury.
Yeah.
I've learned to live with that. But only recently I've realised how dangerous that is, because I had a little problem with the dog, and the vet says, oh, you know, the breath gets fresh, fishy. And I said, well, I can't smell. And then I thought, gosh, I have a gas cooker. You know, and all this, I do put it all down to all the stress and anxiety. This was my divorce settlement, this home. It was my forever home.
Yeah.
And I have experience in interior design, and I did the house out to the last. I spent my last penny on it. I had a sister who said to me, Mary, are you out of your mind? I said, what are you talking about? A new house, all I have to do is maintain it. And then in 2016, I was diagnosed with cancer. And the same year, as the way I put it, my house was diagnosed with MICA.
Yeah.
Now, like, I'm 72. This whole thing is no fault of mine, no fault at all, or my family's, or that. It's the government, the council, and those bogus blocks of priors. Now, I won't use the name because I know that's not right for you, but I've no problem using the name.
Yeah.
I would have no problem being taken for defamation because I'll be a guest of the state. I'll go to prison for a couple of months. Yeah. Sure, I mean, like, it's 72. What's it to me? Be a new experience. But the whole thing is now, I got word this week, I have no choice, but the house has to be demolished. Has to be. I have nowhere to go. And I mean nowhere.
Yeah.
My daughter is a full house. And anyway, it's not, this is the council's problem. It's the government's problem. It's a block player. You know, they should be housing me. It's a basic human right to be housed.
Yeah.
Now, I have nowhere to go. I have actually driven around the council estates and I have seen vacant houses. And I am going to apply for one of those for while my house is being demolished and rebuilt.
And as far as you're concerned, I mean, to be given €15,000 is not good enough. You want to be given a home.
Where am I going to even get a house?
Yeah.
A friend of mine looked on Daft the other day and she said, Mary, you're looking at $1,200 a month. I mean, I'm a blow-in. So I don't know a lot of people here. Do you know what I mean? I remember the first meeting I went to and I felt so out of it. I said, what am I doing? I know nobody. What am I going to do? And I actually asked at that meeting, they were going to lobby the banks. And then I said, now I'm going to sound like little tough now. And I just said, well, what if you own the house? And do you know what the answer I got was? This scheme won't suit everyone. Now, I was on to Greg before, and the same morning, Deputy McHugh was on after me. And Greg said to him, what's that 70-year-old woman going to do that came up here to be near her family? The same answer. This scheme won't suit everyone. So, like, their fault. And as I say, you know, we're a county. We're the only county in Ireland that doesn't have a national rail link. We don't have an electric grid to maintain. We don't have motorways. And we don't have an underground pipeline, gas pipeline. What we're doing, we're subsidising the rest of the country. So it's time for them to look after us. It's payback time. We need a rebate. Now, at this stage, I'd say that the cost of all this is going to be over $3 million because the costs are rising by the day. And the like of me...
$3 billion, I think, more so than $3 million. At least.
Well, it could be a lot more than $3 million, but say for Donegal, even.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it'll be a lot more than $3 million.
Yeah, probably. And it's not, but the thing is, it's not going to be all in 1 year. I mean, in my estate now, there's 6 to 8 of us are bad. And some of them are marginally showing effects of it. It depends on the aspect of the house. Now, I have a gable end.
Mary, I do apologise, Mary. I am really sorry about this. Time has caught up on us. I do have to end the show. I hope we can pick up this again because it's important. But I just wanted to hear your story. I'm delighted to hear that you're on the mend to an extent after that fall. And certainly your plea's been heard. Mary, we hope you get sorted and get sorted soon and that things can resolve themselves over the next couple of weeks and months and do stay in touch. But for the moment, Mary, thanks very much indeed for speaking to us today.
Thank you, Dawn. Thank you very, very much.
And I'm delighted to hear that because when Paddy said earlier that Mary wasn't as fiery as she was, it's great to see the passion coming back. Thank you to all for listening to the programme. Thanks to Anya and to Donna Marie for all their help. John's up next around the Northwest with apologies. I'm a moment or two late. But for myself, Donal, have a very good day.